Welcome to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here is your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Funnel Hacker Radio. I'm your host, Dave Woodward, and I'm super excited today. I've got a great friend who is a short-term friend, meaning I've only known him for about 9 months, but he's become a great friend and a wonderful guy just to hang out with. His name's Alex Sharfin. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. Thanks, man. It's great to be here today. Alex, and it feels like so much longer than 9 months, but I just realized that's all it's been.
Seriously, as we were kind of talking beforehand, I thought, you know, I met you for the first time at Joe Paulus's Genius Network. By the way, yeah. Joe's going to have to give me a commission on referrals. I think every time I do a podcast, I've got somebody I've known from his network. But anyways, we actually met last October at his 25K group. And Russell and I were there, and we were totally blown away. I know you've known Russell, and Russell's known you for a while, but I haven't known you as well as long as Russell has. And as you started presenting this whole entrepreneurial personality type, I was just blown away because it just resonated with me. And I remember Russell just kind of leaning over to me at the time and said, you know, Dave, we have to have him speak at Funnel Hacking Live, which fortunately you did, and those who were there obviously learned from it. But Alex, if you don't mind, can you kind of help everyone kind of know who you are, and most importantly, not just who you are, but how the heck did you figure all this entrepreneurial personality stuff out?
Yeah, I'm sure, Dave. By the way, I just want to say, speaking at that event, what an amazing event and a incredible group of people. And I know I told you this there, but it bears repeating, just the audience at Funnel Hacking is it's an eclectic group of people, like kind of just about anyone was there and just about any type of business was there. But what a mutually supportive and intensely community-based group. So it was exciting to be there. I'll be there next year whether I'm speaking or not. But don't forget, I told Russell my only goal was to be invited back.
Well, thank you, and you definitely will be invited back.
So yeah, no, it was intense. So, I'd love to fill you in. You know, the presentation that I did at Funnel Hacking and the one that I'm doing a lot recently is on the entrepreneurial personality type. And it's more on this discovery that our company's made more than what I really do. So a lot of times people are left thinking, who is that guy? And, to make a long story short, I always knew I was different. I got involved in business when I was very young. My father, lost a business when I was young. I was one of those kids that was really different. I had a hard time with other kids. I had a hard time in school. But for some reason, the first time I was exposed to business, the first time I went to my dad's business with him, it called to me. Like, it felt comfortable. It felt like home. And I was tiny. I was 5 or 6 years old. And my dad sold a business. My dad lost a business when I was really young. Did not go bankrupt, but had to sell it. And I lived through that. And I ended up working with my dad from a young age. And so I worked with him. Then I started a business in high school and ended up having to sell it. And I started another business in college, sold it to a friend and relocated. Had a buyout on some software that was part of that deal. And I was supposed to work for 1 year for a company, ended up leaving after 8 months. That's not how it's supposed to work. And here's what happened. I ended up as a consultant. I ended up becoming a consultant, and I became a consultant at an incredibly high level immediately. So there was a guy who his name's Richard Thal, and he's still in the business. It's funny. I just ran into him in the Denver airport. So Richard and I got together when I was 21 years old. I'm 43 now. And he was an established consultant in New York and had a very well-established firm and was thinking about doing something in Florida. I was in Florida without a job and without a network. I was 21. My family was on the other side of the country. I really had nothing going on. So Richard, it was one of those things where I committed to working for free and really for the opportunity. And you know, if something came out of it, I would be part of it. And so I ended up going in and interviewing with him for Fuji Media, which is a Global 100 account.
Wow.
And we interviewed for New York and Florida, and we got Florida, not New York. And so, yeah. And so here I am, like this kid, and I'm kicking open the doors to a consulting office, and my first account is Fuji Media. My second account was SanDisk, which
oh my
now
gosh.
Is, Yeah. I mean, Richard and I helped launch Flash Memory in the United States. We helped build the digital camera business in the United States. In fact, our firm, our tiny little company, sold the first Flash Memory and the first digital camera orders in the U.S., the DS7 from 50 and the first orders from SanDisk. No joke. And so it was an intense, intense time. And Dave, in the world of consulting at that level, like I went from, you know, I was an intense guy, and I think I always have been. I think anybody who's met me would think that. But I went into consumer electronics, and I had these Fortune 100 accounts, and everything that you hear about being a consultant at that level is true. Like, it's constant anxiety. You're working 100-hour weeks. You know, every single meeting is pins and needles. And for you, it's pins and needles. For the person sitting across from you, it may be the most important meeting of their life.
Wow.
And so for my career, I sat across from people who literally were in the most important meeting of their life all day. So if I'm at Walmart and I have 6 meetings with manufacturers, I'm in a meeting that's routine for me, but I'm watching people go through the hardest meeting of their lives over and over. And when you're in situations repeatedly with people, when you have the opportunity to watch people, it's amazing what develops. And here's what happened. As a kid, I was so different that in order to learn about success, I started reading. And when I'm with people, I know this sounds silly and doctors say I'm full of it, but when I'm with people, I have a lot of symptoms of dyslexia. I have trouble reading cursive. Words and letters kind of flip themselves around. I flip numbers and words and letters around. But when I'm alone, I can read. When it's quiet and there's no noise and the light level's right, and I know that sounds obsessive, but I need all those things, I can read really fast. And as a kid, I read hundreds of books, and then I read like more. And here's what happens, Dave. If you obsess over success like I did, and you're allowed to be around successful people, you start seeing that there are these clear personality traits for success. And as a kid, I thought I was so broken, so screwed, that like I would never belong anywhere. And I went out reading about success, and I found people that were like me. You know, you look at wildly successful people. Einstein couldn't tie his shoes, you know. Edison was homeschooled. Jobs struggled in school and dropped out. Gates dropped out. You look at all of the number of people who have changed the world and had perfect and or ordinary lives is zero. You know?
I totally get that.
But here's what happened as we studied this more and more is that we started seeing these clear distinctions between the personality type in the world that wants to change the status quo, make things happen, do something new, start the business, write the book, write the screenplay, get on the stage, take the microphone. That person's much different than everyone else. And we call that individual the entrepreneurial personality type. And, you know, for us, here's the foundational here's the foundational aspect of being an EPT is that we are momentum-based beings, and we are physiologically sensitive to our perception of moving forward, and we are highly sensitive to constraint. And when we are held in place, when we're constrained, when we can't move forward, entrepreneurial personality types, momentum-based beings, we will become symptomatic of anything in the DSM. We can look bipolar and ADD, ADHD. In fact, you know, the people who are listening to this, if you are a ClickFunnels, you know you have the diagnosis already. You know?
Yeah. And you know, Alex, when you said that, I remember you said that in Phoenix, and you also said that back here in San Diego. And those are the two things that resonated the most with me, because that has been my life, and it still is to this day. There's nothing that frustrates me more than a lack of momentum. I have to be moving forward. And the faster the pace, the better. And constraint just drives me insane. It just drives me crazy.
Well, and when you say crazy, you're not joking, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the fact. Is anyone listening to this podcast, like if you tuned into this, you're not normal. Let's be real. Right? Because most people in the world think, like, don't even know what funnel hacking could possibly be. And there's a small constituency that thinks it probably has to do with, like, fraternity guys and beer funnels. So you're weird. You just call yourself out, right? You're super weird. And so here's what that means. The difference for people like you and I, and I'm talking to everyone listening, is that we've felt like a party of one. We've felt completely isolated and alone. I know I have. There were times where I didn't understand why I was even here. And while, you know, I say every EPT has known what it feels like to ask if you should even be here, because when we get enough constraint, we can go up to and including suicidal ideation, thought, and action, because being held in place breaks us. But here's the fact is that throughout history, anyone who matters to be remembered, anyone who you care to remember, was just like us. And for all of you who are listening who felt different or alone or isolated or weird, here's the fact. Different, alone, isolated, and weird is the opposite of average. And while the rest of the world clings desperately to the status quo, because you felt that way, you now know you are part of the most important club in history, because the entrepreneurial personality type, the people who press the world forward, is the only consistent source of positive human evolution. And we always will be.
You know, Alex, that I think is the thing I hope that as people listen to this, because we've got people who are massively successful and listen to this. And we also have those people who are just kind of getting started and are trying to figure this whole thing out. And I think that's, again, as I look at your history and your past and some of the things that you've done and how you've changed things, how you've taken very negative things in your life and turned them into being very, very positive. We talked at Funnel Hacking Live about your whole CDPE designation and how you literally took something that was negative in your life, used it as a very positive thing, and literally changed in a complete industry. I mean, a complete industry to where I believe, in fact, I think you guys were even saying you guys were given credit for helping pull the nation out of the foreclosure industry, if I recall, something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, the U.S. Treasury, Lori Maggiano, who was the director at the U.S. Treasury during the foreclosure crisis, came to our studios in 2013 and said that according to their numbers, the Treasury numbers, our membership of agents within the Certified Distressed Property Expert designation had pulled forward the recovery of the foreclosure crisis by at least 5 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. And she said it on video. We have video. So anybody who wants to question that can question that all they want. We have it on video. And here's what we did. What was crazy, Dave, is that, you know, Katie and I went bankrupt in 2007. It's always hard for me to, like, get that out, you know? I had always been a wildly successful entrepreneur. And here's what I mean by that. Had I had money troubles before? Absolutely. Had like stuff hit the fan before? Yes. But I had always like figured out a way out. I'd always figured out a way to even use it to my advantage. I'd always figured out a way to like come out of it. And in 2007, after being a consultant for a while, the rest of the story is after being a consultant for a while at the very highest levels, I met my wife and decided almost immediately I didn't want to be a consultant anymore. It was taking too much of my time. I wanted to be married to her and spend more time with her. So I sold that business. We started, like, I was in retirement, so I was going to go into this partially retired mode and continue to invest in real estate, which I'd always done. Within a couple months, Katie had a real estate license. I had a mortgage broker's license. And, you know, this is the early 2000s. I'm retiring. I sold my business. And now we're doing, like, dozens of real estate deals a month. And before the end of the year, Katie's taught one of the top real estate agents in her office, and then the next year in the region. And I was buying and selling more single family homes than anybody in Florida. And we just got to the point where we're no longer dragging around a 10 by 10 of real estate documents. It's like, yes, yes, burn it, burn it. We did over 1,800 deals. And, but what happened was in 2007, the market, just the train came off the tracks. And we were in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. And that was ground zero for the foreclosure crisis. That's where everything hit. And Dave, just to give you perspective, the rest of the country knows how bad that the crisis was. But this is how bad it was in Florida. We owned four condos in a complex called Stonebridge Gardens, Florida. You can look it up. It's in Lauderhill. And we had Chase, evaluations on them, asset evaluations, appraisals, that came in between $160,000 and $180,000. So they were going to give us a line around these. We owed between $60,000 and $90,000. So we were about 50% loan to value. That's, you're sitting really well.
Yeah.
Until the market implodes, the lowest price one of those sold for was $15,500.
Oh my gosh, a 90% cut?
90% cut. So that happened like across our portfolio. And we went from having millions in the bank to spending it through two hurricane seasons, then 2007. We had Wilma, Katrina, then 2007. And also Katie and I weren't doing everything we should be doing. You know, we were spending more than we needed to. We had huge cash reserves. We probably didn't have enough. And our lifestyle was a little out of control and maybe a lot out of control. And so we went bankrupt and it sucked. But here's what happened. We started getting foreclosure paperwork and we'd done so many real estate deals. We were seeing how the banks were handling it and it wasn't going to work. What they were asking people to do was actually illegal. They were asking for multiple HUD documents. They were asking for weird closing packages. Like nobody really understood how this could work. So I was a consultant for a long time. I understood systems, processes, and how like bigger picture stuff fits together. And Katie and I sat down and she kind of held our family together as we went bankrupt. And I took a book I had written for real estate agents and we converted it to this thing called the Certified Distressed Property Expert Designation. And what we did was we proposed, first we told everyone, all the banks, all four major banks, U.S. Treasury, Fannie, Freddie, and everyone we said, and the National Association of Realtors, we told everyone that their numbers were wrong. We were in a 7 to 10 year recession. It was going to implode. We started, and we became like the doomsayers. In 2008, we released our first product. Everybody said we were crazy, especially with being the doomsayers. In 2009, Bank of America, Chase, Citi, Wells Fargo, the U.S. Treasury, Fannie and Freddie were all working with us.
You know, I as crazy and painful, I'm sure as that was at the time, you know, hindsight's always 20/20 and you can learn a ton from it. And I'm really hoping those people who are listening understand, because we were talking earlier about the importance of developing expertise and knowledge. And you've already gone now through two of, I think, seven different areas of expertise that you were talking about to me before we got on the call. But yeah. Again, at this time, you're what, 27, 25? I mean, it's just kind of whatever age. I mean, it's just crazy to see how much you can go through in a lifetime in a very short period of time if you focus, which you've always been very good at from my experience as far as really focusing on what matters most. I see you do the same thing in your family these days. You just mentioned,
no question,
as far as, and then being able to systematize that and help other people from the pain and suffering you've gone through.
You know, Dave, the most important thing for me and what I've done throughout my history as an entrepreneur is I learned young how to lead a team. And not just how to lead an insignificant team, like not an outsourced team that does stuff for me. I learned how to surround myself with hyper-intelligent people who are motivated to go knock down big goals and outcomes, and how to help them, how to make sure that they know how to move forward. And in my early career, that was done through a different type of motivation than I use today. I've gotten better at it. I've become more of an expert at it. I consulted on this for years and years. So in 2007, when our life imploded and we set out, like this is how crazy we were. We were in the middle of bankruptcy. I had to get the documentation released so that I could go sell this product. And our tagline was solving the foreclosure crisis one homeowner at a time, as I'm getting foreclosure paperwork. And in 2008, our first class, we taught 62 people. And between 2008 and 2013, we taught 47,000 agents. Wow. We built over $70 million gross in that business. We did it at about a 30% margin. We were the 21st fastest growing company in the United States. We had a continuity product called the Advanced Program that we cycled about 23,000 people through at $99 a month. And you know, really changed things and built relationships around the country that I don't think I could have ever gotten. The other area of expertise that I got during that time is I had previously been an expert on home shopping. I was actually the top selling expert in electronics and home shopping for a number of years. There's a few videos on my Facebook page. And so I knew very well how to sell on TV. I had done infomercials. I'd produced them. I'd done you know, several thousand hours on HSN. But then in 2009, I started going on television for the real estate crisis, and I became one of the most broadcast real estate experts, or maybe the most broadcast real estate expert on Fox News and CNBC. And so for a 5-year period, we actually built a studio. We have a studio. We have several studios in our office now because we do so much video. But back then, we built a studio where we direct connected to CNN, CNBC, Fox. So I walked down the hall, sat down, and we were live in New York.
Oh, that is cool.
It was really cool. Yeah, it was really cool. We won about 30 Telly Awards during that period of time for video production. So Dave, you know, so that's when people say, what's the secret to your success? I get other people really excited about what I'm doing because it means something. And then I hire people who care and who will do anything to get to an outcome. And it's funny, when you do that, you end up hiring people that, you know, have sensitivities, and you have to coach them a little bit differently, and you have to put a lot of padding around them, which means, you know, you help them with what's going on, you coach them in their lives, and you show them how to save money, and you even show them, like, how do you set up a savings plan, and you know, do a lot of things to help the people around you. But if you're willing to do that as someone who's leading a team, or if you're willing to find people who will help you do that, you end up with this incredible thing as an entrepreneur that's known as leverage. And, you know, these days there's so many people that are banging it out in this world of solopreneur, which, man.
Those are painful sighs.
Well, and it's the worst place in the world to be. And the way that so many people these days are pushing this BS version of solopreneur, boutique business, independent, you know, the reason that that guy's teaching you how to become one of those businesses is because you can't make money being one of those businesses. You know, and they suck royally. Because what you're literally committing to when you say solopreneur, the interpretation of that is, I am good enough to do everything it takes to run a business all by myself. That's insanity. That's hallucinations. That's not, people say I have this vision for a business where I work by myself from the beach. That's a hallucination. Because what will happen, not may happen, what will happen is you're going to break down. And, you know, it's funny how every entrepreneur in their back of their mind says, someday I'm going to be a billionaire. But the number of entrepreneurs that are willing to commit to the level of leadership where that could ever possibly happen is a fraction of 1%.
Oh my gosh, for sure. You know, Alex, if you don't mind, I'd like to really kind of delve into this, because this is one of the things I run across, people ask me this all the time. And that is, so how do I go from just being my own thing to where I'm spending a ton of plates, I got wearing a ton of hats, everything else, to where I can actually afford to go out and hire somebody? And how do I build a team without losing, you know, part of what I'm trying to build? And I know there's a lot of trust issues that are built into that as well, feeling like, you know, I can do it better than anybody else. But you've done this multiple times. And if you don't mind just kind of sharing with people, how do you actually do that? I think it'd be really helpful.
Yeah, sure, Dave. You know, first, I want everyone to understand where this comes from, because I think that, you know, a lot of people talk about building teams, and I'm defensive about it and aggressive about it. And I want you guys to know why I'm both defensive and aggressive. One is, I think about 95, maybe 99% of the coaches, thought leaders, authors, and speakers out there who are teaching people how to build teams don't have a clue. And here's why. They don't have teams.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a team, but you are a team building expert, you're full of shit. I don't know if this is one of those PG or not PG places.
This is kind of raw. It rolls as it does.
Okay, good. Because you're completely full of shit. And I will gladly take you on stage and undress you in front of everybody in your lack of ability to ever help anyone build a team. Because here's what happens. When you build teams, they naturally form around you. I can't help but build teams. Katie and I have 5 or 6 businesses that run around us like little satellites that just keep building. You know, we started buying property here in Austin. Now we have a whole property management business. Now I've got a lady sitting at a desk out here. She runs my property management division. Like, that's what happens. Because I just keep making it bigger. It's like, hey, look, it's making 45 points a year. Why would I stop doing that? I trained 3 people how to go do it. Now I've got a realtor working for me almost full time. That just happens by accident. And when you're around anyone, like you look at Richard Branson, he's building a team a day by accident. So I'm defensive about it because I think most people are telling you how to do it wrong. getting on the phone and hiring seven people in the Philippines to do tasks for you is not building a team. That's using a system. And then I'm also, I'm aggressive about it, and I want you to really think about it, because here's my belief about entrepreneurs. I call it the entrepreneurial paradigm. We need more protection and support than most to get to our full potential. But any request for protection and support makes us feel vulnerable and exposed. So I want you to know that I know how it feels. And I still, on a daily basis, feel the same level of vulnerability any of us feels when we ask for help. I've just learned that I can put up with that vulnerability, that short-term pain, in order to get longer-term outcomes, and I can be very transparent with my team. And so the difference between how you get there, Dave, is, and here's the fact, is that you have to go from being a transactional to a transformational leader. And people say, well, okay, I didn't say like I wanted to change everything. What's the easy way?
Yeah.
You know,
like, where's that easy button?
Yeah, because again, hey, that shit you just said, like, that sounded hard. What? Not no. I don't want to change people's lives. Like, how do I just get all of my stuff done? Well, here's the problem. There's no in between. You are either a transactional or a transformational leader. And here's the fact. Working for a transactional leader sucks. And here's reality in the world. 84% of people in the world do not like their jobs. That doesn't make sense anymore. Like, we don't have to have people not liking their jobs. 84% of people in the world. And in the United States, it's not that much better. 70% of people do not like their jobs. Only 30% are excited about what they do. And there's even a small fraction of the 30% that are really excited about what they do. And here's why. The vast majority of leadership looks something like this. Here, do this thing for me. Tell me how it goes, and I'll tell you what to do next. That's transactional leadership. And it's abusive and painful, and it sucks for everybody around you. Because when you're saying, do this thing for me, tell me how it goes, and I'll tell you what to do next, that's when people feel micromanaged. That's when you hired people and you start using people as process instead of having people actually create process for you. And you slow everything in your world down. And here's what's crazy about being a transformational leader. And Dave, I've helped some of the most challenged. I'm trying to find like a fair word to use. Some of the most challenged individuals with some of the most challenging personalities and frightening personalities become transformational leaders, to the point where people like get teary-eyed when they talk about them. And I always like think in the back of my head, I remember 15 years ago when every secretary this guy had a nervous breakdown. And now people are teary-eyed over them. This works. And here's why it's so interesting. You just have to become a transformational leader, and the steps are easy. So instead of do this thing, tell me how it goes, and I'll tell you what to do next, it's simple. You give people big outcomes. You say, go help me accomplish this. Like, we tell our team things like, right now we have Katie Hernandez, who's our designer, where she's helping us build Instagram. And we don't say, hey, go do tiles for Instagram. We say, Katie, we have like 100 followers on Instagram. We suck. What can you do to make that bigger? She went out and bought education. She went and got some training. She's figured out how to do it. We painted a big outcome for her. She's going after it. Now, the second step is you coach so that everyone succeeds. Don't ever let anyone fail. So if she takes that Instagram and we're gonna coach her, make sure she succeeds, help her stay in momentum, help her feel encouraged, get support that she needs for that. And so instead of, here's what you need to do, tell me how it went, and do this next thing, we're painting big outcomes, we're coaching until she succeeds, and then we're painting bigger outcomes. And here's why that's transformational. If you let people go out and create the outcome, they grow, they learn, and your company explodes. And when the people around you are growing and learning and your company explodes, you become a transformational leader.
Alex, I'm just taking notes here. sorry, I didn't. No, because I've been around enough businesses and I've seen both sides of that, and it's interesting for me, having worked with Russell for the last 8 years on different projects and seeing his maturity, and I look at, you know, our friend Joe Polish, I look at some of these other guys, and just seeing yourself as well, to see how a true business for real longevity, it's got to be transformational. transactional businesses, they just die. They can't sustain themselves.
Yeah. Well, and that's why you have these weird anomalies in the world, right? Like this guy who runs this online marketing business, but people cry about him. Or a dude who used to run a carpet cleaning business and people get like emotional about him, you know? That's some weird shit out there. Like, is that, you know? And it happens because in the contribution of allowing the people around you to support you, you become a transformational leader. And here's what happens. The more you're willing, like the more I'm willing to say, hey, you take this result and drive it, not you take this thing I need, right? I don't tell people, hey, go make me a page. I say, go figure out how we get the most conversions in this list that we need. And so when I give the result, when I'm willing to do that, I'm giving up a tremendous amount of control, but I'm gaining incredible amounts of leverage. So the more I'm willing to give up control, the more I'm willing to give someone else the outcome, the more I'm willing to give them the responsibility for the accomplishment, the more transformational a leader I become and the more they learn. And here's why I become transformational in this case. It's not just because the people around me grow, but the more I'm not responsible for outcomes, the more present I can be. And presence is what it really takes to become transformational. And if you think about anyone you've ever been around who feels magnetic, who is effectively persuasive but never makes you feel sold, and who makes you feel comfortable just by speaking, that person is present.
I totally agree with you on that. Totally, totally agree. Yeah. And I think that's, again, as a business owner, as a person who's, you know, trying to grow a business, you kind of go back and forth with, gosh, you know, I got to do all this kind of things. And I think one of the, what I've seen you do many times now, and that is the ability to have a much longer tail or a much longer outlook for that result. It doesn't have to happen tomorrow. And you give people the ability to fail and learn from that, those failures. And by doing so, they transform and they become so loyal to you. It's just almost crazy.
Well, and yeah. And Dave, you know, that's the intense part is this. We have so much trouble asking for help, but yeah. The more we're willing to give in and transparently ask for help at the deepest, most transparent levels, the more our team can help us. And so there's oftentimes now, Dave, you know, I've spent, and this is part of my background that people find interesting is that, you know, being in the world I was in, I was able to eventually see a lot of really amazing stuff. And I've been in every type of private transportation there is, including a blimp. Don't forget, I've worked with Fuji. I actually flew the Fuji blimp. and you know, I've had amazing trips. I've been in exotic places of the world, incredible types of food, just crazy stuff. But one of the most transformational experiences was several times in my lifetime watching someone go from relatively humble means to billionaire. And dude, that's intense, like really intense, because the contrast when somebody becomes a billionaire in their lifetime, the contrast of change around them is so rapid and so intense that it's kind of that feeling like the first year you have a baby, if you're gone for 4 or 5 days, you come back, you're like, oh my God, what happened to the baby?
Right? I got that visual. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, Dave? Totally. But when I would leave my friends, I'd go back and I'd come back in 4 months and be like, holy shit, what's happening? Like, everybody changed again, you know? And, but here's some of the facts about billionaires. Over time, they worry about less. Here's some of the facts here. And let me give you the contrast for the average entrepreneur. Over time, the average billionaire worries about less and less and less and pays attention to less as they gain leverage. Over time, the average entrepreneur piles on more and more and more until they absolutely build a business that encloses them. Over time, the average billionaire begs his team for accountability, pushes everyone around him to give him only the right data, only the right numbers, and pushes every single person in the room to be transparent. And over time, most entrepreneurs want to look at their numbers less, want to actually know what's going on less, and pay less attention to the details of the business. Like these contrasts, Dave, are so stark that it's, you know, I had to start pointing them out and sharing them with people. Because here's what I can tell you about billionaires is that 100% of the ones that I know, first, 100% dyslexic. Like not no gray area. Every freaking one is dyslexic.
Does not surprise me at all.
and ADD, ADHD, bipolar, blah, 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 whatever. And you know, I share with people that I've had a ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, and autism diagnosis, among others. And the difference between me and my friends in Silicon Valley that run multi-billion dollar companies that have the exact same diagnosis is that they'll only talk about it behind closed doors, because if it actually came out and it was real, their stocks would react.
Sure, sure, of course.
But Dave, it's the same thing. And the fact is, all of these labels, all of this crap, it's just that. So it's been, when you look at the contrast between the people who move the world around like chess pieces, here's the underlying, you know, simplicity. They make their lives easier.
I love that. I think that's awesome.
I often tell entrepreneurs, if your days are getting more difficult on a daily basis, then you're building a house of cards, because you are literally building a business around you. And so there's a clarification there. So my days today are far more intense than they have ever been before. I have meetings, like I might have 3 meetings in a row where I have to be so present that I'm sometimes tired afterwards. So there's a higher intensity, but they're not more difficult. More difficult is when it's harder to get out of bed. More difficult is when you feel like you're dragging yourself into the office. More difficult is when you're fighting yourself to pick up the phone. If you are doing that uphill battle every day and you're building a bigger business, you're just creating more stuff you eventually will not do when it all falls apart.
Yeah, I've been there. I know exactly how that
is. We all have. Yeah.
Well, Alex,
so you've done it, right, Dave?
I've totally.
Yeah.
I totally. And I guess I think that's why when we first met, it just, your message resonated so much with me, because I'm like, yeah, I get it. I totally get it. Well, Alex, one of the things when we were together that I was kind of upset about was the first time I met you is you had a book, The Entrepreneurial Personality Type, and you only had 500 copies.
Yeah.
You gave it to Russell with the intent that they, as I recall, each person was supposed to share that with someone else.
Yeah. So each person, here's what we did. It's kind of an experiment. So I'll give you the short story, but it's kind of a longer short story. But people should understand, because I think you'll like this, Dave. Books mean a lot to me. In fact, if I had to point to one of the biggest foundational things in my life that has made me successful, it's books. And I'm one of those people that still surround myself with really good books. I have bookcases all over the place, and I've read thousands of books. I love written material, and so do my kids. And so when I wrote a book, I didn't want it to just go out and not be anything. And today, best-selling books, one of the challenges is about 2% get read. 2% are ever actually consumed. And so we did the math. If I was to go get a good best-selling book, which is about 25,000 copies or 50,000 copies, let's just call it 50, that means we would have spent about $250,000 to do it, and we would have had 1,000 people read our book. That sucks.
Yeah.
So what we did instead was we published the first of its kind. It's a first and final limited edition, 500 copies. It was hand signed by me, and then we sent it to 500 people, and the ask was that they handed it on 100 times. And what's happened is we have now about 470 of them out. The last 30 are going out shortly. But they've already been passed like hundreds of times. So here's what's crazy, Dave. We only printed 500 books. We have already exceeded the readership of a 50,000 book bestseller campaign.
That's awesome.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome. And congratulations. So, that's really cool.
Thank you. And so if it continues and we really get into the bigger numbers, you know, there's the potential for 50,000 passes. We think it'll probably be between 10 and 20. That still means that in the general market, we would have had to sell 500,000 books.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome.
So here's the thing though. Here's why this is so cool. We've promised we will never republish that book, and we won't. We're not going to do it in the same format ever, but we've had like hundreds of calls to our office now, and they're getting to be more, and we want to put this book out. And so what we did was we created an ebook which has the replica of exactly this book called The Entrepreneurial Personality Type. And it describes people like us. It's not a sales letter. It's a totally different type of advocacy book that people probably are not familiar with. It takes about 2 hours to read. and it will definitively either convince you that you are either an entrepreneurial personality type or not. And if it does, it'll show you you are not alone. And we set it up at this URL. It's charfen.com, charfen.com/freebook. And Dave, this is one of the first places I'm announcing it, so I'm pretty excited about this.
Well, that's awesome. I'm actually going to have to get my copy there, because as much as you love books, so does Russell, and he doesn't share well. So I, that's one that's on his shelf and probably will never see the light of day from anybody else unless they come into his office to read it in his office, because he feels as strongly about books as you do. So I understand that. So that's pretty awesome.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave.
As we start wrapping things up here, anything you want to – I think that's fantastic. I'm going to get – for sure, I'll make sure I get a copy there myself. But anything else you want to share with people, or if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
You know, charfen.com, C-H-A-R-F as in Frank, E-N.com. And we'd love to have you come down to Austin to one of our events. We do events for entrepreneurs to gain leverage, build teams, scale up, and really move forward fast.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Alex, thank you so very much for your time today. Always great talking to you. Love seeing you around, and I can't wait to see you again soon.
Thanks, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast. If you'd like to be notified anytime we release a new episode, just subscribe over at funnelhackerradio.com. In addition to that, we'd love to send you a free gift. You can find that free gift at funnelhackerradio.com/free trial. One last thing is, we love giving away cars. So if you'd like access to a free dream car, all you have to do is go to funnelhackerradio.com/dreamcar, and you'll get all the details. Thanks again for listening.